What day is it? The 20th?
21st.
Oh, too late to blaze it.
And there's our cold open. Thank you once again for joining us on the Delco Young Democast. My name is Mike DeEva. It is awesome to talk to you guys again. Joining me today in the podcast, Oubliette, Pasquale Cipollone. How you been?
I'm good. I'm ready to come out guns blazing with this Darrell Metcalf story.
Yeah, man. Let's get right into it. We may have some more friends joining us later on in the show. But yeah, let's get right into it, man. Darrell Metcalf. I'm a little bit sad that Amanda's not here right now to keep the fuck Metcalf count running.
As another lying homosexual to Representative Metcalf, he should just go fuck himself.
All right, let's.
That's all I got.
On the guy's official Facebook page, I actually have the statement that he made here. It's pretty gnarly. So content warning here.
I'm gonna pull this up.
Reading directly from PA State Representative Darrell Metcalf's Facebook post from yesterday. And I quote, "Another lying Philadelphia liberal Democrat legislator attacking me this week with the help of the media. Another Democrat playing the victim while he's actually the perpetrator. After a committee meeting last week, Philadelphia Representative Rabb approached me and launched into a profanity-laced, disrespectful tirade. A week later, he wrote a letter making false accusations that I threatened him and based it on me possibly being armed because of my support for the Second Amendment. There's a pattern to the attacks that have been made against me by liberal loser Democrat legislators on my committee. Former Rep. Leslie Acosta, who lied about me, is now convict Acosta. Lying homosexual Rep. Brian Sims has been under an ethics investigation. Then there is constant touchy-feely Rep. Matt Bradford, who has touched me over 40 times in what many observers have said is an attempt to provoke me." I do just want to point out at this point, breaking out of the quote, that every single sentence has had an exclamation point after it. "When they oppose us on my committee, they lose every vote and we win every vote. I block all substantive Democratic legislation sent to my committee and advance good Republican legislation. Liberals continue their lying attacks in an attempt to stop my work in defense of taxpayers and our liberty." End quote. There's a lot to unpack there.
Oh, please. Miss Metcalf. Mama Metcalf. God.
This fucking guy. In a time when all the rats seem to be running off the Trump ship, this dude just seems like he's doubling down super hard.
Well, you know what? I know what caused the rat infestation in Ridley. He must be hanging out there. this guy, he's actual garbage. Like, working in the lieutenant governor's office for 6 months, like, mm-hmm. watching people, every time that they were like, "Oh, Metcalf is speaking," I'm like, just turn off the fucking, like, this guy, I don't know. He is what inspires me to run for office, because I'm like, if this man can do it, literally anybody
yes.
can.
And when they said anybody, they meant anybody.
Genuinely.
A dead body.
Genuine.
A body of water.
Overqualified. Overqualified to replace him.
Oh, my God. And he's been clearly catching a lot of heat, but, you know, his leadership and all of the Republicans in the Pennsylvania State House have shockingly been completely silent on this.
Well, and so... Oh, God, I don't want to break this down, but let's fucking go.
Let's break the fuck down.
So here we go. We got, so I'm unfamiliar with this whole Rab approaching him and a profanity laced tirade.
There was an altercation, and now the Representative Rab is saying that Metcalf threatened him with a gun which is illegal to have on the floor of the State House.
It's illegal to have in the Capitol building,
yeah.
But there are state representatives that still do it, so would not be shocked.
Yeah, see, Micarelli, Nick.
Well, Republicans and Democrats, but I'm going to keep them secret. But it would not surprise me if Metcalf had a gun, because apparently his own sexuality is so fragile that, he goes
into the gun shop. "What's the longest, hardest thing you have?"
Yeah. Oh, don't get me started on that. Miss Metcalf. But like, going to the end against Bradford. I watched that video.
That was buck friggin' wild. That was
like how can you just be so? I don't know. I am not wildly ridiculous, so I do not get his mental patterns.
And it's just the idea that you were in the armed forces. I think he was in the Army or the Marines, one of the two, Metcalf, like way back in the day, back in fucking Spanish American War or whatever. Mm-hmm. So like
they blew up the USS Maine to hell with Spain.
Yeah. Like the idea that nobody touched you that entire time, like if that's how you react to people touching you, like my dude.
Well, like I just the response, I can't even say it was like an overreaction, but the response to flip out on Bradford and then be like, I know you're into men or whatever. And I'm just like, where the fuck is that coming from? But to actually first of all, my first problem is we're going after lying homosexual Sims. Don't you do this. Metcalf, don't come for my boy. Do not come for Mr. Sims, because Metcalf, you are garbage. Like, it's just not gonna, I really just want to see him, you know. I just want to see Metcalf just so I can be like, mama, what's wrong? Speak to me. Let it out. I know you got a family and all that, but mama, come on,
put your head on my bosom.
Yeah, you know, are we gonna catch you tapping your foot underneath the stall in the airport like the rest of them? Like, come on.
I mean, the odds are shockingly high.
The odds are alarmingly high.
And that's fine, you know. He's got to do him, you know. Chase your bliss, stand in your truth.
It's just reading this, if you had said guess who this is from and just torn out all Pennsylvania related things, I would have been like, is this a really long Trump tweet? Because it's exactly what it seems like. And I mean, I don't know where District 12 is.
It's somewhere in the middle of nowhere.
I mean, but I hope District 12, you know, just do better. You know what I mean? Like, next time, just get your shit together and elect someone that's actually responsible. Like, what happened to the Republicans that were actually scary? You know what I mean? Like the Mitt Romney and McCain Republicans, where you're like, oh,
yeah, like they get even Mike Pence, like, you can do some damage. Like,
oh, I mean, he's what scares me more about that is mother wife, but later. But yeah, and I'm like, really? Now we just got people like Metcalf that are repping the party. Like, this is too much.
He does have, if I'm not mistaken, he has a gay man running against him on the Democratic side.
He does, and we are very proud to have him. I don't remember his name, and that's actually really... Oh my god. All I'm seeing is shit about Connor Lamb and Saccone. Great. Fantastic. Like,
appreciate it.
Thanks for nothing. Daniel Smith Jr.?
Yeah.
Wait, I don't know who he is.
Hmm?
I don't know Miss Jr. I gotta say,
Miss Junior.
Let me. I need to edit this. I'm gonna give a shout out to a very dear friend of mine. I went to PCCC last weekend.
Yeah, we'll talk in depth about that.
Oh, I will love to talk about that. But I drove down a good friend. Good does not describe it. We are just out of control. I drove my friend Melissa Robbins down, and it got to the point where, in order to disarm for me threatening male people, I would just call them Miss whatever. So everything became Miss thing, like it just got, but then it escalated to the point where every man I disagreed with, or you know, had drama or tea about, I was like, oh, look at Miss blank, so Miss Metcalf over here in the PA General Assembly.
The thing is, that would probably be the single worst thing you could say to that guy. He would flip shit so that's why hard.
I would love to get elected and be like, oh, hello, Ms. Metcalf. And, like, and then watch him be like, another lying homosexual called me Ms. Metcalf.
Well, that's why you live stream the whole thing.
Exactly. I'd be like, oh, Ms. Metcalf, you know 50% of me. God, he's just actually so disgusting.
Oh, my God. It's shocking. And like I said earlier, like the fact that when everybody, 90% of Republicans are like running screaming from Donald Trump because they can read the fucking writing on the wall. But the fact that this guy is like going super hard in the paint and just like, yeah, Donald Trump is like my real dad. Like, is unbelievable to me.
Somebody needs to go gather Miss Metcalf from Capitol. Get her together. See how she's doing.
Yeah. Hopefully that's Dan Smith Jr.
Oh, I would love it. I would love it. Well, that's just why, like, I loved Danica Rome.
Yes.
In Virginia.
I was going to bring this up if you didn't.
Like, yeah. I do not have words to a man that is so transphobic to get swept away by the first trans woman. Oh, no, not the first. No, the first.
I think she was the first, yeah.
Was she the first?
Yeah.
She was the first elected to the assembly. I think there was another trans woman that, like.
Maybe. You, but.
LGBTQ history. But it's just so poetic.
And exactly.
If Metcalf gets taken out by a gay man, death dropping on the Capitol steps. Just like, ha.
And the thing is, my favorite part about Danica Rome is that, like, the night she won the election, somebody asked her about the other fucking shitbag, and she was just like, I don't talk poorly about my constituents.
Oh.
So, just chills. Ultimate mic drop.
Chills. Chills.
Oh, so good.
My
so
wig
good.
Is outside.
It's down the block.
It's down the block.
It's around the corner.
It's actually running away. My wig has collected its things.
Your wig has gone over the bridge into New Jersey now.
It's packed its bags. It is in Jersey.
Oh my God.
But I love that the equivalent of a clapback being a political campaign is just what I'm here for in the post 2016 world. Like,
oh man, to go back to the PCCC, let's talk about that. What was that experience like? First of all, like, for our listeners who don't know, what was the whole thing?
So the PCCC is the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, and it is basically the group that got Elizabeth Warren to run for Senate. And ever since then, they have been growing. I think this was their third or fourth year holding a conference down in D.C. And it was actually the largest class they've had so far.
Do you know roughly how many people?
About 450.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And everyone, most of the people that attended were running for office in some capacity or another. And we had, you know, we had Senator Sanders speak, Keith Ellison, we had Nina Turner, we had Warren, Cynthia Nixon, who's running for New York governor. Yeah. One of my favorite things about that is after she got off stage, people started chanting Cuomo's in trouble.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
Hashtag unqualified lesbian.
Oh, I was so jealous. I heard that there were pins.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want the unqualified lesbian pin. And then I looked into myself. I was like, Pasquale, are you kidding me? There are actual lesbians in this crowd that want the unqualified lesbian pin. Sit your gay ass down. It's okay. It's okay. Because the LGBTQ delegation was... I love them. And
I saw a bunch of pictures you posted on Facebook that were amazing.
And someone goes... Someone commented and said, what are y'all wearing? And I was like, we're not... Like, this is not some sort of Democrat retreat. This is... If I'm going to wear shorts and the sweater that I've worn for the same event 4 weeks in a row now, I'm wearing that. But yeah, so it was basically just a bunch of trainings, seminars about how to run campaigns, getting your speeches locked down and kind of finding who you are. And I think for me, I can speak for a few other people, but I'm not going to. The biggest lesson I learned down at PCCC was self-worth. And that if you wait your turn to run for office, it will literally never come because other people will just steamroll you out. And if you ever think you're unqualified for office, you're wrong. Because if you believe in economic, social, and environmental justice, then you should be on the ground running right now.
Yeah, there's no such thing as unqualified based on the 2016 presidential election.
Yeah, and if you care about other people, you're qualified to run.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know you were kind of bouncing back and forth between Philly and D.C. for that, which was probably...
Well...
Were you sleeping more than an hour a night or not?
What is slepe? Is that what... How do you... Can you spell it in a sentence? Como se dice sleep en español? I have no idea what you're talking about. No. I slept maybe 2-ish hours every single night.
Oh, man.
Just because it's similar to my DNC experience. You have an organization that has gathered people from all across the country, and when you get the chance to go out and socialize with each other, you don't want it to stop. And we were just all over, I guess, the northwestern section of DC, I think is where it took place, for that weekend. And yeah, I was coming to and from Pennsylvania and DC to give a speech for the Pennsylvania College Democrats and get on a panel.
Just slide that in there. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
no, that's amazing, dude. I'm so thrilled you got that opportunity. That's amazing.
Let's just say that if I ever, you know, take out a house rep or a senator, that I know how to do that drive without paying tolls. So, and I can do it 4 times in 4 days. So it's fine.
You're not doing the Joe Biden on the train.
You know what? I would do that, but do you know it is $150 to take an Amtrak one way from Philly to DC?
Dude, you may as well fly.
But if I take it at 3 a.m., oh, it's like $40.
Oh, my God, dude.
I mean, which is fine. I mean, yeah. Will I get on the train without a glass of wine? That's up to you, conductor. Can you tell what's in my coffee cup? No, you can't. You can't prove it. So
get an iced tea bottle.
Yeah, exactly.
Get some brown liquor. You're set.
Exactly. Senator anyway. Cipollone's sleeping real hard on the train. yeah, he is.
The Delco Young Democast does not endorse this kind of behavior. See, merely suggest it.
Well, I mean, all I'm saying is, if you're from Delaware County, you just got to be real with yourself. You know what I mean? So, the Ridley rat infestation needs to be talked about at a later point.
Yeah, let's get to that after the...
Put a pin in that.
Yeah, after the, like, serious bullshit that we got. But, yeah, that sounds like an amazing training and opportunity. Who else did you get a chance to meet up with and spend time with up there?
So... from the Pennsylvania delegation in our area, that I can name off the top of my head, we had me, it was Melissa Robbins, Molly Sheehan was down there, Kristen Seal. We had some people from the Philadelphia area, and their names are going to escape me at the moment. Their last names, I mean, their first names are like Beth, Tamar, you know. It was great. It was great meeting a lot of people. There's people running as independents across the state. But it was great because you see Pennsylvania's in actually pretty good hands with progressives. But the one thing I really liked is there was a moment where I don't remember if it was Elizabeth Warren or if it was Cynthia Nixon. But they said, you know, about this year, everyone's running as a progressive. Everyone's progressive. But what does that mean? And, you know, you're looking around and they're like, if someone's running in your state and they're a progressive, why are they not at this table? And I just thought about that and I was like, I guess someone didn't fill out the questionnaire in a very progressive way. Like it was very interesting because now that's like a buzzword. Everybody says they're a progressive Democrat and it's like,
exactly.
You're allowed to be just a Democrat. You're allowed to be a moderate Democrat. Run as you are. Like,
absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. And I, you know, tricking people into voting for you is a guaranteed way to piss them off.
Yeah. As we have learned, as we have seen.
Yes. But yeah, that's actually, I consider myself fairly progressive. Mm-hmm. You know, a statement like that kind of bums me out a little bit just because like I would have loved to have been there, but
it was candidates. I'm sorry. It was solely referring to just like people running for office that are saying, I won't name names, but everybody running for office is a progressive.
Fair.
And not everybody was there.
No, that makes sense.
I mean, I get to suggest people next year if you're interested. So. The hotel room's a little expensive, so you're going to be staying in an Airbnb with me because I'm going.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
I'm going out every night.
That conversation's a separate one for a separate time. But back into more boring shit, just because it's something important that's happening that I feel like we need to, you know, at least make our listeners aware of. The Pennsylvania Department of State... has decided that we need new voting machines. They're going to have a paper trail instead of just you press a button and cross your fingers that everything worked properly. So, you know, they're still figuring out exactly what they want to do. But by December 31st, 2019, the state of Pennsylvania has to have new voting machines. You know, people talk a lot about, oh, you know, Russia fuck with the election, and, you know, are our elections secure and things like that. We've actually talked about that with a couple of the candidates that have come in here. But this seems like they're actually taking some advice on that. It's going to be expensive, but, you know, like Robert Torres, who's like the Department of State's secretary, said, you know, we need to get Pennsylvania's voting machines up to 21st century standards of security and resiliency. So, like,
I'm glad he said 21st century.
Yeah.
Because these voting machines are different all across the state.
Exactly. Every single county is different. Mm-hmm. Even within counties, occasionally you'll come across different ones, which is friggin' nuts to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea, having worked as, like, on the election board, like, inside the polling place when everybody comes to vote, the idea that nobody gets, like, assurances that everything was cool, like the number of people who have to ask after they hit the vote button, like, did it go through?
Yeah.
Like, is... You know, of course we should have some sort of receipt or something, like, to show that, yes, I actually voted.
Well, and the amount of time someone has come out, I've worked in my polling place for, I've been involved in it every year in some way or another, whether I've worked it or I've been outside, or there's been so many times where someone has gone in, and Republican or Democrat, and they've gone and hit something, they've hit their buttons, and then they hit vote, and then they go, well, all the lights flashed on the Republican side. What does that mean? Or they all flash on the Democrat side. And I'm like, I don't know. This machine is older than my entire family. Like, I have, this machine came here before my family did from it. Like, I'm like, what? It's just in a state that is as critical, or as crucial, I should say, to national politics, Pennsylvania being a large state, our voting machine should be a little bit more secure.
Absolutely. And I want to just mention that, you know, everybody who is not Kris Kobach has said that, like, the election, the actual vote totals were fine. Nobody's fucked with them on, like, a large scale.
Yeah.
But, you know, are we going to wait for it to happen and to do something?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is something that's long overdue. You know, so many other states, they'll actually, like, fill out a paper ballot and then it'll get, like, scanned like a fucking multiple choice test. Just to make sure that everything's cool.
And even that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Compared to what we have, I don't... For those who aren't familiar... Oh, I can't say this because it varies across the county.
Exactly.
From my specific polling location and a few others I have seen scattered around, the typical ballot that we have, after you are done, after it's 8 o'clock or 8:30, I forget, you know, and everybody's done voting, they move to the back of the machine, shut it down, and they press a button, and a ticket prints out with numbers. And if you don't know what the numbers mean, you're not going to understand what's going on. And it just, for me, it makes sense. My voting location is in a friend's meeting house. So, like, for me, every time I go to vote, it's like, oh, I'm literally being transported into the past.
Yeah.
The voting machine and this building. And it's kind of just ridiculous that you won. They're not that easily handicap accessible. That's the first issue.
Yeah, they're tough. You got to, like, bend the whole machine down, and even then it's pretty high.
Yeah, and I'm just like, you know, and people have complained, like, well, if we have screens, how are we going to know who to vote for? And I'm like, well, this magical thing about computers is that you can put pictures on them. So, like, you can match faces. Like, I don't know. Get creative. I'm just grateful that these new machines are coming out. I hope by 2019, you know, we can fix some things, but
yeah, some officials have said that by the general election in 2019 they want to have them in place. Then there's a bunch of people, primarily Republicans, surprise, who are hesitant because of the price tag. I think the state got like $13 million or something like that from the federal government, but the total price tag is going to be like $125 million. So the state's going to have to foot a little bit of a bill.
Well, then why don't the Republicans just cut it from the school budget like they do everything else? There you go. Problem solved. Why don't we just cut that again for the 50th fucking time?
I'm laughing because I don't want to cry.
There's so many places to get that, and I won't get started, but, you know.
Yeah. You know.
Bet you Ms. Metcalf ain't on board.
But, yeah, it's the idea that, like you were saying, it's just that one, it's, you know, like three or four copies of that receipt that get printed out. I think it's five, actually. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's however many copies of that receipt. But people don't have any proof that they voted and who they voted for. Yeah. So if something ever gets screwed with or, like, a voting machine explodes or whatever, you know, like, there's no record of those votes. So if people need to, like, go back and audit it and make sure of what happened, there's no way to do that right now.
And see that, but this is where the argument's going to come in, that people need an ID to vote to keep track of people.
See,
I'm going to counter my own argument.
Yeah.
Which is that when you go in, at least for my precinct, you have to sign that you're voting, mm-hmm. and then your name goes in a booklet.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so then, I don't know, maybe you should get a number, I guess. And then that should be the way it's traced. Is, here's your number, 42 today, put in 42, type it or whatever, and then vote. And that would be my solution to that, is to, and then I guess you can get whatever receipt, I voted sticker pops out, I don't know.
Yeah. And it's like the fact that in, like, since 2000, I think there have been maybe 15 cases of actual, like, voter impersonation fraud out of, like, billions of votes that have actually been cast.
And a few of them have actually been Republican, which is hilarious.
Gasp.
And one of the Trump daughters, wasn't it? Didn't Tiffany Trump, like,
she was registered in New York? She was registered in multiple places, but, you know, that's very common for college students mm-hmm. and things like that.
Really quick story, everybody. Mm-hmm. And since this is Delaware County, an Irish name is really rare to come by, I know.
Gasp.
So we had someone come in and complain that their daughter had allegedly already voted at another polling place. And this is not the name. You know, I'm not even going to say a name because I'm not going to start any drama. Yeah. But it was such a bait. You know what I'm thinking about. If you think about that girl you went to school with a super Irish name that there was like 40 of, it was that name.
Yeah, and it's like John Smith.
Yeah, you know, or like Erin McLaughlin. You know, something like, like, and they were just like, I can't believe my daughter, someone voted in Newtown Square with her name on it. And I'm going to get the bomb. This is voter fraud. And I'm like, I know this is going to be shocking to you, but there are more than just, you know, one random basic Irish name.
Yeah.
I mean,
you and me don't really run into that problem too often.
No, I know there's other Cipollones across the county, but yeah. I don't think there's any Pasquales out there. Well, you know, if anyone's going to commit voter fraud, use my name. Good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck.
But yeah, it's nuts to me. And I'm glad that they're finally catching up with fucking reality now, because I don't want to wait until people actually, you know, somehow get into the machines and fucking
it's only a matter change of votes. Time.
Exactly. And our machines are so low tech that I kind of question if they're even able to, like, connect to them to change vote totals.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, can they even be hacked? Like, yeah. Like, what?
I think those voting machines were built before cell phones existed. So, like, they may not have anything connecting them to anything. It's
scary.
Yeah, it really is.
It's scary that that's what voting, like, democracy in Pennsylvania looks like, is outdated voting machines. But then you go, you know, two towns over and they've got computer screens that are completely handicap accessible. And
exactly, even if it's like, you know, even if it just prints out like, here is your vote and you get your little sticker and like you said, that would be ideal, so that there's proof that if somebody, you know, if the people are counting have a vested interest, you know, not casting aspersions here. But if the people who are counting the votes have a vested interest and they say, yeah, this machine got, you know, 200 votes for one side and no votes for another, you can go back and say, okay, hold up. We actually got receipts now.
Yeah.
Like, we saved the receipts. not just metaphorically. Yeah, but the idea that we're not doing this in Pennsylvania is fascinating to me.
You ever just get so tired of this whole thing?
Yes.
Like,
nearly every day.
Since I just, this is too much. I'm just grateful that the voting machines are going to get changed, and I don't know. I got nothing more on that. I mean, if they're going to come out before the 2019 general, I mean, that helps me, but that's a future.
Yeah.
That's a future announcement.
Governor Cipollone.
Governor. Surprise, Wolf. I got your petition signed, but you didn't see me coming. Bet you thought you seen the last of me.
I'm telling you, man, when I was over in Italy, I was trying really hard to, like, somehow get you to be the prime minister. It almost worked.
I mean, I think if I was prime minister of Italy, oh, I mean, Italy would be the greatest country on the planet. I would be like, we're going back to our roots. Everyone's getting a Fiat. We're going back to hydropower. We're cleaning this bitch up.
Dude, there's so many of those tiny little Fiats. Like, the thing about people, like, driving scooters like fucking maniacs, 1,000,000,000% true. And when you see the streets, you understand why. Because everything's, like, a foot and a half wide.
So. We would, if I was prime minister of Italy, global warming would be curbed. The world would be better. It would just be a fantastic place.
I'd be into that.
I'm going home.
I actually looked into this at one point, like, if you know, depending on where, because the bloodline is basic, citizenship can be passed through, like, paternal bloodline for a few generations.
Oh, I'm in. My grandfather is the exact same name as me, and he looks Italian as hell. So I'm in.
Nice. But anyway, that's a separate conversation. That's amazing. Yeah, separate conversation there. Let's go back to the rat infestation. I haven't heard shit about this. What is going on?
You have not heard?
I haven't heard anything.
Oh, my God. Okay. So, let me pull this up on my phone, everybody.
Story time.
Story time. And listen, Ridley can win the most Delco town
of Delaware County. That shit was rigged so hard.
It was rigged. Well, no matter who won, we all lost. Let's just start there. No matter who wins most Delco town, Delaware County loses. And my favorite is there's a difference between Delco and Delaware County. Like, Delaware County is, you know, your LinkedIn profile picture, and Delco is, you know, your MySpace profile picture.
Holy shit, man. I don't even want to know Snapchat what I still got picture. On fucking MySpace.
So I'm going to type in, you're going to come with me on this journey. I'm going to type in Google Ridley rat and just see what pops up.
It's the giant inflatable rat that the union protesters.
Ooh, you know what? Around. It could have been that. Ridley rat infestation. Let's talk about this. Okay. So this rat infestation is actually completely out of control. let me just click on this real quick. So, if anyone knows this location, it is the shopping center right across from the Wawa in Ridley, right near the train tracks. So the pet store, I don't know where it originated. I didn't initially report this, so forgive me. But there was an outbreak, and apparently it was infested with rats because they said it was because they were doing construction across the street. Now, this is what I'm saying. Ridley won most Delco town, and this is what you get. We dumped the rats. This is the rest of Delco getting you back. You think you won.
There was like some pizza shop owner here in Upper Darby that tried doing that.
Rats into the ceiling.
Yeah.
Delaware County's Delco's signature move is to dump rats into an establishment. There was an SNL skit years ago where they were doing Weekend Update, and they were like, you know, the Philadelphia Police Department is searching for a woman who shattered a window, or for someone who shattered a window and dumped a box of rats into, like, their ex-boyfriend's apartment or something. Yeah. And they're like, Philadelphia has narrowed the search down to the entire city of Philadelphia. No, that's Delaware County. Yeah. The Delco police have narrowed it down to the entire county of Delaware County.
That's some Folsom-ass shit, man. You
know, we all know someone that would dump a box of rats into someone's house or a place of business.
Oh, God, I can't stop laughing about this.
It's just wild. There's the Papa John's there. So they're closing everything down and dealing with it. I don't believe it's related to health or to food. It was allegedly, I can't say allegedly, it was because of the construction, but to be funny, everyone's like, you know what I mean? Like, the rats have been there for a long time. It's, you know, it's Ridley, so. That's what you get. You can't win everything. The same thing's going to happen. Delco Live is doing the most Delco bar in May.
Oh, Jesus.
That place is getting its windows smashed and put rats in. I'm telling you right now, I didn't do it because you know it's going to happen. Everyone knows it's going to happen. I did not do it, but you just know. If it's like Barnaby's and Ridley or something.
I mean
that's got to win.
What are the odds that it's not going to be?
I mean, it could be what Tom and Jerry's. That's pretty wild.
That's up there, yeah.
You know, McGillicuddy's, yes. The Trophy Tavern.
let's run down the list of nominees
The list of nominees of bars. Well, I mean, we're going to be real. No bar in media is going to win most Delco bar. Because none Probably of them are... Not. Well, Jocelyn's could walk away with that.
Maybe.
Yeah, but you know it's going to be, you know, somewhere along the river is what I'm saying. Yeah. Is where the most... Rats, watch out, though. Whatever bar wins, 24/7 surveillance. Yeah. Someone's going to dump a box of rats from the Ridley infestation into your bar.
Totally. What's the name of the bar that's also a polling station in Upper Darby? Shit. It's not...
Y'all do that out here?
Yeah.
Wait, so you can, like, vote and then get a drink?
Yeah, dude.
Or drink and get a vote,
either way. Yeah, steal your nerves with a couple of beverages, and then, oh man, I can't remember the name of the place. It's somewhere in Upper Darby's, I think it's somewhere in Upper Darby's 5th, but I could be wrong about that. But either way, the struggle is fucking real.
I find that fascinating.
Yeah.
I find that absolutely fascinating. You know,
oh, we need 70-something of them in Upper Darby, so it's like, we got people's garages, we got... in the back of the bar. Yeah, it's nuts, man. Next time Gina's on the show, we'll talk about it.
She'll know exactly where this place is. She could not be with us because she's doing a Get Out the Vote event canvas.
Yeah.
For Zabel?
I believe Mike Zabel and possibly some of the other state candidates as well. But yeah, so people are actually doing work and we're here making fucking goofy goofs in my basement. So.
I mean, I've warned. This is for me. This is funny.
All right. So we're going to take a couple of minutes now and listen to the conversation that we had with Mary Gay Scanlon, who's running for the 5th District. Really good conversation. So please check it out. Mary Gay Scanlon graduated with honors from Colgate University before receiving her law degree from the University of Pennsylvania. Her 35-year legal career has most recently seen her serve as national pro bono counsel at the law firm Ballard Spahr, providing free legal services to low-income clients and nonprofit organizations across the country. She served for 8 years on the Wallingford-Swarthmore School Board, part of that time as president. She's currently running for the Democratic nomination in the 5th U.S. House District, which includes all of Delaware County, along with portions of South Philadelphia and Montgomery County. Mary Gay Scanlon, welcome to the Delco Young Democast.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, it's our pleasure. Yeah, we like starting off just getting to know folks. So, you know, where did you grow up? What was your family like? That sort of thing.
Sure. I grew up along the Canadian border in New York State. So my dad had gone to college on the GI Bill, and then he went to law school, and his first job out of law school was working in the Kennedy White House.
Oh, excellent.
So grew up in a family of Kennedy idolizers. He worked for Bobby Kennedy in his Senate campaign then on his presidential campaign. So that was kind of a guiding force. Then my mom was a public school teacher, as is my sister, two younger siblings, and grew up there and then kind of got out of Dodge and headed to the bright lights and big city of Philadelphia in this area. So I've been here since the 80s.
Okay, bypassed New York City. That's not a common choice, but one that I'm glad to see more people making. So, you know, I guess I don't even really need to ask the next question, which is if your family was kind of involved in politics. Yeah. But were they involved sort of like civically in their local community?
Absolutely. So both my dad and my granddad were the Democratic county chairs in Jefferson County, which sounds a lot more impressive than it is until you realize there were only about 3 Democrats in the whole county. So they just got to kind of pass it back and forth. But my grandfather went to the 1968 convention in Chicago.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, they were both involved. It's civic engagement's always been a big thing with the family.
Oh, yeah. Nothing important happened at the 68
convention. Yeah, not a historic event.
No, not at all.
You know, was there sort of a specific moment that you connected with the political process, even though your family had been involved a lot?
Sure. I mean, I think I've always been involved in the political process. In college, I volunteered for a number of campaigns. Being an idealistic college student, I volunteered for the John Anderson campaign when he was a third-party candidate. But otherwise, it's been pretty much Democratic candidates. My dad ran for school board when I was in law school, had a fabulous campaign. He ran as a writing candidate and beat an incumbent.
Oh, wow.
So that was a really exciting effort. Yeah.
That's a feat.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. My uncle came in third because some people couldn't remember which Scanlon was running. But You know, so I've done that, been involved here prior to my own run, supporting other local candidates, and most recently supporting, since I left the board, school board in Wallingford after my kids graduated. Mm-hmm. I've been working on electing more women to office.
So, you know, that kind of brings us to, you know, why now and why the 5th district? Why is this sort of the goal?
So why now? I mean, why now is because our country's sort of burning down around us since November 2016.
Yeah. Not the most difficult question.
Right, right. That's why a lot of people are active. Mm-hmm. Why the 5th district has to do more with the fact that I've been living in the same house in Delaware County for 24 years, but I've been in 3 different districts. So when I moved in, I moved into the 7th district, which was the traditional Delaware County district. And then 7-8 years ago, I got gerrymandered out into the 1st district. So even though I live in the heart of Delaware County, I was part of the 1st congressional district. And it was only in January, February of this year that with the gerrymandering decision coming down and the district being redrawn, that I actually live in the 5th district in the Delaware County district.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, now that especially with the district kind of being redrawn just recently, you know, have you found anything surprising about the new district since you've been campaigning or just about the larger campaign in general?
Well, I think there was a pretty good sense that given the fact that Goofy Kicking Donald, the 7th, has been such a focus of national attention and was a big focus in the League of Women Voters lawsuit, mm-hmm. There was a pretty good sense that Delaware County was going to come out of it with a district that was Delaware County-centric. Right. But it couldn't just be its own because we only have about 550,000 people in this county, and you need more than that. So where were the other people going to come from? Mm. You know, and the theories abounded, and the maps that were sent to the Supreme Court were all over the map, so to speak. So, you know, where it was going to come from, you know, I don't know that it's surprising, but there were a lot of different options.
Yeah.
I think it's a good district. It makes sense. It's a good district for me because I've worked throughout the region. I mean, I've been a public interest lawyer in Philadelphia, and I've worked statewide. I was at the Education Law Center for a decade. So that involved advocating for education for students across the Commonwealth. I've worked with a number of different schools in Philadelphia and then throughout Delaware County. So for me, it's a good district because I have a lot of roots in Delaware County. I've got a lot of roots in Philadelphia. Being a legal services lawyer, you know, representing folks who are at or near the poverty line. I have a lot of clients, former clients in Southwest Philadelphia, and which is kind of the forgotten piece of this. That's an area that's really, really struggling, but everyone talks about South Philly and talks about Delaware County. I mean, there's actually a lot more in common between Southwest Philadelphia and the eastern suburbs of Delco than maybe Southwest and South Philadelphia. There's actually a river between those two parts of the city.
Yeah.
So I have a couple clients who circulated petitions for me in Southwest Philadelphia just because we've been friends after being clients and known people throughout that area.
Yeah. Just to go back a little bit to the, you know, the redistricting and things like that, you know, currently you're serving as co-chair of the Voting Rights Task Force for the
Association. No, it's the National Association of Pro Bono Counsel. So it's people who have my job, which is jobs with major law firms across the country that provide pro bono support to nonprofits. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights was formed by President Kennedy, again, one of the favorites, in the 60s. He called together the leaders of the country's largest law firms and said, we need help to execute the civil rights movement, and we just can't do it without private lawyer help. So in the same tradition, the Association Pro Bono Counsel works with these agencies, Lawyers Committee, Brennan Center, ACLU, Campaign Legal Group, all the agencies that are bringing the lawsuits around the country to strike down gerrymandering, strict voter ID laws, all the other modern Jim Crow voter suppression laws that we've seen coming out in the last decade or so that have been so aggressively pursued. The Department of Justice only has 17 cases involving voting rights right now. These other organizations have brought many, many more, and the cases that the Department of Justice has, they've reversed their position since it went from the Obama to the Trump administration.
Definitely in different hands now.
Right, yeah. Different hands. So there's a vacuum in terms of who's enforcing the rights of the people to have their voices heard. So that's what that work involves. It involves either attacking things like strict voter ID laws or helping the people subject to them get the IDs that they need. And we've worked on both those kinds of things.
Excellent. Yeah, I know there's a couple of different things that I'm following, both at the state and the national level. Yeah, just a couple. But, you know, I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on the Pennsylvania legislature's gutting of House Bill 722, which was intended to form the Independent Redistricting Commission, and also the federal government's attempts to defund the Election Assistance Commission.
Right. Well, I mean, there's so much going on. And with respect to the state thing, I've been working with the Fair Districts Group, you know, since before it was the Fair Districts Group. There's been discussion in the legal services and the voting rights community for, you know, quite some time about what could we do locally to have a better system for drawing our boundaries. And I think there's national consensus that one of the reasons we have such gridlock politically is because we have these gerrymandered districts, safe districts. People don't have to compromise. They don't have to listen to each other. They can just sit in their own little pockets and, you know, scream slogans. So nationally, obviously, it's been a big topic about how to do a better job with that. The Fair Districts movement has been astounding. I think January 2017, I attended one of their first meetings in Philadelphia. They had like 400 or 500 people out on a Tuesday, Tuesday night at a church on Broad Street.
Wow.
It's, you know, people have had it and they're fed up and they've been organizing all over the Commonwealth, got this great bill moving forward. And of course, it's been bottled up by the Republican controlled legislature and the incredibly, they just don't get it. I mean, they've just been smacked around by the state Supreme Court for unconstitutionally gerrymandering. And instead of saying, you know what, you're right, we went too far, let's try to fix this going forward and let's fix it in a bipartisan manner. So if we get thrown out, we're not going to just have the Democrats do the same way because it's an equal opportunity abuse. They just doubled down and said, no, we're going to make it worse. Just incredibly cynical and irresponsible. So not that I feel strongly.
No, not at all. Yeah, I want to go back a little bit earlier on in your legal career. You started, one of your earlier jobs was working with the Education Law Center of Pennsylvania. You were largely representing students with disabilities in multiple different cases. So what drew you to that sort of work, you know, early on in your career?
Well, so as I said, I grew up in a family that had a lot of public school teachers in it. Public education has always been you know, kind of central to the American identity. It's how we get civics education. It's how people know, you know, how people get the training to get jobs, succeed in life, know how to be part of an informed electorate. So the civics and the education and the two things together have kind of been what my life has been about. That sounds really pompous, but it's what I'm interested in. You know, I had this family that was invested in public education. I guess in law school was when my dad was on the school board. But for years before that, he was an attorney for about 20 school boards in upstate New York. So this was always a topic of conversation. When I was at the Education Law Center, it was actually in the middle of a continuum of work I'd been doing around children. You know, just kind of the whole thing that how we treat our kids is, you know, the future of our country. If they don't have good health care, if they don't have a healthy start, if they don't have a good education, then we're all toast because there's going to be no one to pay our pensions and there's, you know, going to be no one to innovate. So it's a building block kind of concept for me. And before I went to the Education Law Center, I'd been involved in representing, since 1985, I've been representing kids in the abuse and neglect system. I'd been involved with Bar Association activities and was co-chair of a commission on children at risk and how are we failing our kids and what can the legal system do to help there. So then the Education Law Center built upon that, and it was the Education Law Center was formed to be an analog to a similar organization in New Jersey, which had advocated for better funding for public schools. And the hope was to be able to do something similar here in Pennsylvania. And the law here was not good until recently. The law has changed recently. But when the agency wasn't able to make a lot of progress there, they turned to using the tools of the IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, to try to advance that agenda. So we did a lot of work around the rights of students with disabilities. And also zero tolerance came in. I ended up having kind of a subspecialty in representing Cub Scouts who accidentally brought a scout knife to school for show and tell and ended up faced with expulsion, or someone brought a piece of cutlery because the zero tolerance laws don't look at, you know, developmental appropriateness or intent. You know, someone borrows dad's jacket and ends up with something in the pocket and all of a sudden they're faced with expulsion. So pushing back against sort of thoughtless, knee-jerk approaches to ordinary juvenile behavior. And dealing with a whole sort of criminalization of juvenile behavior. You know, my dad ended up a judge by the end of his life, but he got kicked out of a couple high schools and he was kind of a hellion when he was younger. But he was allowed to mature eventually, didn't do anything too bad. And yeah, by the time his prefrontal cortex developed, you know, he was able to be successful. So
yeah, we certainly wouldn't want to contextualize anything. Why would we do that?
Yeah, so the Ed Law Center, it was a great, great opportunity to really dig into a lot of the education issues, the disciplinary issues, the, you know, the relationship to the school to prison pipeline when we're not properly serving kids. Did a lot of work. It was right when charter schools were becoming, you know, the latest panacea, which of course they have not been. Have a lot of opinions on charter schools. Feel free to ask.
That is actually something that I wanted to touch on, just because there was a recent event in Philadelphia at a Philly for Change group meeting where there were some remarks that kind of raised a couple of eyebrows, may have been misconstrued about charter schools. So I did want to ask you to kind of clarify your position on that.
Okay, what?
Just that I, to be honest, it was secondhand information that I received, but it was kind of an something that, you know, indicated that there may have been an openness to charter schools in some situations.
By me?
As I said at the event, I think it was. Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I didn't even think there was a murmur that
ran around the crowd, so I didn't know. You know, as I said, I wasn't there personally, so this is a secondhand
report.
But
that's why I'm a little confused. Yeah, it must have been another candidate because.
Well, that would make sense given the other candidates that are in the race.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, so at any rate, my experience with charter schools has been absolutely we need education innovation, but I don't think that taking public school dollars away from public schools and directing them at private enterprises or religious schools or things like that is the way to go. I certainly understand, you know, the desire in communities that have bad schools to do something different. That makes a lot of sense. But the system that has been set up is not helping. When you can get data from charter schools, it usually shows that they don't do any better than the public schools. So that's a real problem. They're not held to the same accountability, the same standards. You know, when I was at the Ed Law Center, ended up representing tons of kids with disabilities or disciplinary issues who are just being chucked out of the charter schools. So, you know, they're not being held to the same standard. They don't have to deal with all of the kids. And it's just not the way to go. I mean, we've seen incredible abuses because there's so little oversight. We've seen a lot of public dollars being drained for private profit, lots of indictments. You know, we've got Betsy DeVos now as the Secretary of Education, you know, high up on my list of least favorite cabinet members, but it's hard. You know, the list just keeps getting longer.
How do you choose?
Yeah, it's a little difficult. But, you know, she's advocated for this stuff out in Michigan and has pretty much gutted the Michigan public education system. So not a fan.
All right. How do we ensure that teachers, no matter what kind of school they're teaching in, you know, don't get burn out after a couple of years and they continue to, you know, be able to help our kids and have the resources they need to actually do their jobs?
Well, we need to stop setting up false choices that, you know, we either have to screw the teachers or screw the children, basically. I mean, we need to do a better job of funding public education, maybe take some money from some walls or some extra billions that we've just thrown at the Department of Defense that they say they can't even spend. Too much money has been thrown at them. You know, we can't have these false choices. Pennsylvania in particular does a worse job than I think it's 46, 47 other states in terms of funding public education. You know, we hate to keep thanking Mississippi for coming in at the bottom of the pack, but you know, this has been the situation for decades. You know, we had some progress under Governor Rendell, who was an ally in the school funding fight, and you know, really did a data and policy driven approach to improving school funding so that we could get all schools on a better level. The property tax system clearly does not work. You end up with these gross disparities between districts, and if the state would do a better job, that would be a big help. But one of my platform positions on the federal level is, I mentioned the IDEA before, the Disabilities Education Act. It was monumental in that it gave a right to students with disabilities, and that's a whole range of disabilities, the right to attend school and to get services that would help them be successful in life. The problem is it's never been fully funded in 40 years. And if that were fully funded, it would take a lot of the heat off the individual school districts, because in the absence of good federal funding, then it falls to the state, which has then pushed it down to the individual school districts. So, you know, just investing in our future the way the Eisenhower administration invested in actual infrastructure, we need to invest in our people, because that's the greatest resource. And it starts with the kids.
You've come out in support of student loan forgiveness, tuition-free community college for all, and tuition-free public universities for families earning less than $150,000 a year. What specific steps do you think need to be taken to achieve these goals?
So with the student loans, I mean, that's the one I focused on the most, because that's the most federal program.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we've seen a lot of abuses there. We saw some efforts under the Obama administration to correct some of those abuses, things like cracking down on predatory debt collection practices by for-profit universities, which typically show little benefit to the recipients. For-profit universities like, coincidentally, Trump University. So we've seen this Department of Education roll back the protections against, you know, trying to collect from student loan recipients when they didn't really receive a benefit. Mm-hmm. I think we need to do a better job of policing where those loans are being given. We need to do a better job of how the loans are originated and make sure that people aren't profiteering off student loans. Why should banks be able to get better interest rates than students? So we need to really work on that system, make it easier to get loans, make it easier to pay them back, but also work on underlying, how the cost of all of this $1.3 trillion in debt?
Yeah, it's something like that.
Student loan debt. So we essentially just had a $1.3 billion tax cut for the wealthy and for corporations on the failed assumption that trickle-down economics is going to help our economy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we should be forgiving all student debt, but forgiving a significant portion of it would be a huge impact on our economy. Taking that same money, putting it in the pockets of ordinary Americans, most of whom are starting out in life, they have a lot of expenses, that money's going right back in the economy.
Yeah. It's something that affects so many people.
Right.
And just who can't make decisions because they're burdened in debt.
They can't make decisions. It affects entrepreneurial spirit because people can't take jobs because they can't afford to take jobs. Mm-hmm. It affects public service, and that's one area where I'd really like to see more total forgiveness of student loans. If you agree to be a public school teacher, if you agree to go into legal aid, if you agree to do these other public sector jobs that are not high paying, that make it difficult to pay back loans, we should be providing a way for folks who serve a certain amount of time in those jobs to get loan forgiveness, because they're providing a huge service to our country. And they're not going to get high pay for doing it, but it can make the difference between someone going into that field or not.
Yeah, absolutely. It
makes a lot of sense.
Yep. You work for one of the largest law firms in America with a history of representing corporate clients in labor disputes. Mm-hmm. Yet you yourself have helped helped represented workers several times, including the U.S. women's hockey and soccer teams. Has it been difficult to take on the sort of cases you'd like to do?
I mean, that's one of the things that I hope makes me a good candidate, is the fact that I have to deal with competing interests. And I've had to deal with that on the school board, you know, limited budgets and people who want everything. And working in the context that I have, I mean, being an advocate for low-income clients and civil rights in the context of a corporate law firm. Mm-hmm. So have there been times when I couldn't take cases that I wanted to? Yes. On the other hand, I've had an incredible platform lawyers get a bad rap sometimes. Yeah. Often people don't know that.
We've heard that working polls. Yeah, absolutely. Enough of these lawyers.
Right, right. But, you know, oftentimes people don't realize that all lawyers have a professional obligation. You get a license to practice law, you have some duties with it. Mm-hmm. And you are supposed to provide free legal services to people or causes that would not otherwise be able to afford it. So that's been the focus of my career. Mm-hmm. And most large law firms buy into it. You know, not everybody buys into it, and that's a problem. But
it's given with any profession.
Yeah. As with any profession, yeah. That's right. But the firm I've been engaged with has been very involved in it. Last year, our firm gave away 50,000 hours of free legal services. Wow. That has a value of about $20 million, and it ranged everything from working on helping people exercise their right to vote to helping people stay in their houses, including when they were being harassed by Jared Kushner's firm. It involves a death penalty case we've been involved in for 14 years. Just got the guy a new trial. It involved, you know, we got presidential grants of clemency for President Obama for 29 people who'd been swept up in the mass incarceration and, you know, the mandatory sentencing guidelines of the 1990s. So, you know, up until recently, when the threats from the federal government just have been astounding, it felt like a place where I could really, really, really do a lot of good. And to the extent that conflicts arose, you know, there's always more poor people out there, unfortunately. There hasn't been a lot happening to reduce the numbers of poor people lately. Mm-hmm. So there were always other people to help. You know, if I couldn't go down one alley, then I would find another.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You also helped organize legal representation at multiple airports the day President Trump issued the Muslim ban. Can you take us through how that day played out for you?
Oh, my gosh.
If it's not too traumatic.
It was a wild day. I was on a business trip, kind of a business retreat in Charleston, South Carolina, the day that Saturday when the Muslim ban went into effect. Mm-hmm. And that afternoon, I started getting texts from a colleague in Philadelphia that there were these two Syrian Christian families who'd landed at the Philadelphia airport and were being turned back. And so they were trying to figure out what could be done and could someone get out there and everything. And things moved very quickly. And before the ACLU could get out there, those two families were put back on planes and sent back. But so this is kind of the way my job operates. We're networking with people in different cities and with the nonprofits that really drive this national conversation. So as the day wears on, these various listservs are organizing at the various airports. So one of our attorneys had played golf in Charleston in the afternoon. She got on a plane. She lands at JFK, and we had other people meet her there, and they start organizing habeas petitions. And at one point, the state troopers threw all the attorneys out of the airport, so they got an injunction to get back into the airport. And this was happening in other cities. I mean, JFK was kind of the big hub. Yeah. But we had folks in Atlanta who held a sit-in with John Lewis. Oh, wow. There were folks in Orlando. There were folks on the West Coast. In New York, there was kind of a crazy story. After these injunctions had been issued and they'd gotten orders saying that the ban shouldn't be enforced, ICE and Border Patrol were still putting people back on planes. Mm-hmm. So there was this young woman who's a long-term resident, had a green card in New York. She'd gone home for the winter break, and now she's coming back from Iran via the Ukraine. So she gets stopped. They won't let her in. They won't let her talk to an attorney. And they put her back on a plane to Ukraine, which isn't very helpful because she just had connected through there. So our team of three attorneys is trying everything they can think of to get her off this plane as it's taxiing to take off. And they call Border Patrol. They say, nope, out of our hands. And they call the control tower and they say, nope, out of our hands. One of the guys called 911, which if you're at JFK, ends up in the 911 dispatch center for, I think, the Bronx. And they were like, what the, you know, no.
Oh, boy.
I'm not doing anything with respect to that. So they engaged in creative advocacy. Uh-huh. And because they'd put the woman back on the plane, they had given her back her phone. And so they advised her to stand up and have a sudden and loud medical emergency.
Oh, wow.
So they did get the train. Yeah. They got the plane to turn back around. And when she got back to the airport, they were able to get an order, get her off the plane. But the scene was just wild. There was another family that had come in, I think from Iraq. No, she was Iraq. No, I think another family from Syria. They had just gotten their visas. It's like a 2-3 year process, intense vetting to get it. They let the mother and they let the mother off and kept the father and daughter. And so this woman is standing there at, you know, baggage claim, just weeping for 24 hours because she can't contact her daughter. She can't contact her husband. No one will tell her what's going on. They won't let them talk to lawyers. It just was ridiculous, completely cruel, completely reckless, completely not thought out, and a harbinger of things to come.
Wow. That's that sounds like quite a day.
It was. At 3 o'clock in the morning, we're like organizing things on the West Coast and the East Coast and what's going on. My husband knocks on the door. He says, I can hear you texting in there. Like, I'm so sorry, but things are really going down right now. Yeah. So
that's really horrific, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's such a scary way, the way certain leaders manipulate people's fear.
Right.
Into thinking that other people are bad people.
Yeah. Oh, right. This will solve your problem. No.
Well, was just the first step, because the same day that they did the travel ban order, they also did an order that upended the priorities for who gets deported. Mm-hmm. And it changed from actually being bad hombres, you know, folks who'd committed violent crimes, folks who had lengthy criminal records, to anyone who'd broken the law in the U.S. And if you're here in an undocumented status, then you have broken the law. So all of a sudden now we're having raids, we're having people swept up and deported who've been here for decades, who own businesses, who have, you know, wives and children, who are citizens, and just disrupting families. And for the next 3 months, there was just all this activity. We literally had to write a manual called How to Protect Your Family and Your Assets in Case You're Deported. How can you get a standby guardianship in 50 different states in case you get swept up by a raid while you're at work and your kids are at school? Because ICE doesn't have an obligation to provide for the kids. So the fear in the immigrant community and the, you know, the referred fear throughout the people who try to help them was really astounding. And just one thing right after another that had to be dealt with.
Yeah, that's... I'm very glad we had people that were able to kind of put those manuals together, even though, you know, it would have been better if they weren't necessary in the first place.
Yeah, but, exactly.
We've touched on a couple of different things here that I want to kind of bring together, as far as, you know, we've mentioned the Ukraine, we've mentioned Jared Kushner, we've mentioned voting protection. You know, with all of the new young voters that are starting to get registered, you know, should they feel confident, you know, giving their personal information to the government in order to register for the upcoming election? Basically, is the election safe?
Oh, my goodness. That's a nice take. Yeah, I mean, clearly election information security has to be protected. I mean, that's something, you know, instead of driving this false narrative of, oh, there's all these, you know, ineligible voters voting, we need to be paying more attention to making sure that every eligible voter can vote. And we've seen some great stuff happen here in Pennsylvania, where for the first time you can initiate voter registration online. You can do a better job there. We've seen other states where there are extended voting hours. You don't have to worry about one day. It can be over several days, early voting.
Yeah. New Jersey's just put, is in the process of putting automatic voter registration into place.
Right. So, I mean, those kind of things to expand the ability for eligible people to vote. But obviously with it comes the need for security. So security from threats, both external and internal. Mm-hmm. So we need to protect our elections from foreign bad actors. And then also from, you know, things that are going to promote voter suppression through things like roll purges, things like that that we're seeing in other states.
So I certainly don't want to scaremonger or anything like that. Like, Noah, I know that you're going to be registering for the next election.
Yeah. Sorry, I can't vote in the primary. But, birthday's June 21st.
Some other states allow you, if you're going to be
by the
eligible,
time of November, you can.
Right.
Yeah,
but it would be cool if I did it here. Although I'm kind of glad I don't have to make a decision. It's a tough one to make.
My son had his first election a couple years ago, and he had his wisdom teeth out that morning.
Oh, my goodness.
But I told you I was a civics geek, so I dragged him to the polling place with his ice packs on his puffy cheeks and took a picture. Because I am a mom. But, you just have to vote.
Well, I mean, I think, and also the other side, that being the the other side, that being the Republican Army, the Republican Party, sorry, has figured out when, you know, less people come out to vote, they don't win. And so they're going to do whatever it takes to make sure that that happens. And it's good that we're combating this effort and, right. And steps are being taken. It's as scary as it is, I think hopefully justice will prevail.
Well, and having folks who are engaged, I mean, frankly, it feels as though America got a little lazy for a while. You know, things were ticking along and we didn't have to worry. I mean, I'm older, so I saw in the 70s as the EPA came into effect and water got cleaned up and air got cleaned up and we saw those benefits. And, you know, the roads were still good for a while until this winter at least. but, you know, we had some infrastructure. We had some things that had been invested in the past and were working well. And people got lazy and people and, you know, businesses said, well, we can do a money grab here. And the government enabled that. And people stopped voting. People stopped coming out to, you know, debates and election events, and we could just stay home and bowling alone and all that kind of stuff. You know, we could just stay home and binge watch something and not participate, but we have to participate.
This last presidential election definitely jolted people. Mm-hmm. And of course, all that comes with the results of that election is horrible, but I mean, at least, you know, to take the positive away from it, it woke everybody up.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, especially people that are in their 20s right now, kind of came of age during the 8 years of the Obama presidency, and they just kind of assumed, oh,
it's safe.
This works. Yeah, this works the way it's supposed to.
My mom did that, too. Yeah, everybody did it.
But people that remember George Bush and are now seeing Donald Trump are kind of realizing, oh, wait, no, this is actually participatory, and we need to make sure that we are steering our democracy.
I think that's right. I have three kids who are in their early 20s, and it's been difficult for them to process because they were Obama children.
Yeah. And I mean, since we're obviously gearing the show towards, you know, people your children's age, you know, the younger millennial and Generation Z voters, you know, are there any other issues that you think that those voters are going to be particularly concerned with in this election coming up?
Well, I mean, the environment's huge. Despite the fact that my son can't seem to, you know, reuse the same towel, he's very concerned about the environment. So, you know, I mean, the environment's huge. I said before, I mean, we can't have an EPA where the person in charge of the EPA is trying to dismantle it and hide data and deny science. So the environment is huge because, again, it's a building block. It's an investment in the future. Mm-hmm. I mean, education and student loans, obviously, those are critical to young people's ability to succeed, get ahead. I mean, we can't just rely on college education because there's a lot of good technical jobs out there that don't require a college education. We need to invest more in that, all of which leads to better jobs and innovation here in this country. So those are kind of top of mind. And then, of course, gun control.
Yeah.
And that comes from a couple different directions.
Do you think there's a need for campaign finance reform?
Oh, yes. I did before, and now I know there is. No. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's an obscene amount of money that gets spent on campaigns. And we really need to do a better job about that. Limit donations from whatever source, have a lot more transparency in terms of who is giving what and how that's happening. Absolutely.
Yeah, I know. Do you find that the number of politicians who are kind of giving themselves these substantial personal loans as part of their runs, you know, do you find that troubling? You know, what do you think the implications are of a system that makes it easier to run if a candidate's able to fund a significant portion of their own campaign?
I think that's the way the system is rigged right now. I mean, a person who does not have some kind of financial stability cannot run. I mean, it's just not possible. It's been really discouraging when, you know, the first question that you get asked by people who might be willing to invest in a campaign is how much can you raise, not what do you stand for, what do you hope to accomplish.
We'll kind of end on a lighter note, I guess. Let's talk about the chickens.
we have chickens.
It's just a little throwaway line on your website, but how many are there?
That's right.
We currently have 6 chickens.
Oh, my goodness.
We have 6 chickens. Grilled, Nugget, Dixie, you know, all terrible
call
puns.
Call it Nugget?
Grilled, barbecue.
It's the littlest one. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
You know, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Did you have to kind of like get any special permission from the Swarthmore borough to
that? That is one of the benefits of living in Swarthmore. It's you can have chickens. You cannot have alcohol, but you can have chickens. So, and it is a Delco thing. I mean, my son, when he was little, he was a member of Delaware County 4-H. And so he started raising chickens about 10, 12 years ago, and we've kept adding to the flock as ours die of old age because they have names. They don't go in a pot.
Oh, yeah.
But we
do they lay eggs?
Or? Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
That's, so you guys have...
We have fresh eggs.
That's pretty cool.
We have
cool.
fresh eggs, yeah. No, huh. it's been great. And they had started to kind of die out after he went to college, but last summer my husband said he missed them, so we re-upped the flock. And we got a college essay out of it, so that was good. You know.
Can you taste the difference?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. I was not previously a big egg person, but like the yolks are bright orange when you have like organically fed chickens.
Wow.
And yeah, they actually do taste better.
Maybe that's a way you can bribe vote. No, I'm just kidding.
An We're egg good. In every pot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's as good a place as any to leave it. So, Mary Gay Scanlon, thank you so much for joining us on the Delco Young Democast.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Now it is time for everyone's least favorite part of their life. What did millennials kill this week?
I'm excited. I don't know what this is.
Ladies and gentlemen, this week... millennials have killed cooking. Pasquale is taking his headphones off and is walking away. According to this is actually an article that I found on Bustle of all places. The headline is "Millennials are the worst cooks of any generation," according to a self-reported survey. Just to quote, "It feels like every day some outlet proclaims millennials are killing a new industry. Members of the age group are supposedly to blame for the demise of beer, movies, sex, among other things. Whether or not those born between 1981 and 1996 are actually responsible for the demise of certain industries remains a point of speculation, but it would appear there's a distinct skill many millennials lack, cooking. Apparently it's so bad that millennials are the worst cooks of any generation alive, and we're more than willing to cop to it, too." So basically, Pasquale's just staring off into the corner. I don't mean to hurt you with these things, but
it happens.
Yeah.
But we're here. I'm crying.
Apparently what happened is that the website Porch.com, which, and bear with me, is actually a place where you go to, like, hire a painter or an electrician or something like that for your house or the person you need to build your deck. Decided they were going to conduct a survey about the culinary abilities of people by age. Looking at the study, it actually looks fairly robust. They had 750 people of all kinds of ages, and they told them, like, you know, what do you think your skills are with this, that, or the other? They gave them a test about, like, ingredients, a list of 10 things, like, name which ones are cheeses and stuff like that. What is this tool? And apparently the millennials that they talked to scored the lowest lower than Gen X or baby boomers on pretty much everything, with the exception of how confident they were they could bake cookies from pre-made cookie dough in a tube.
Leave this long silence in. if anything... accurately describes my feelings, it is the long silence.
How would you describe your culinary skills?
Oh, my culinary skills are shit, but there's a reason behind that. That is because my sister, who's 2 years younger than me, is like Gordon Ramsay.
Nice.
And it's just, I've never, out of need, I've never learned how to cook. And plus, growing up Italian, it's always been easy. Pasta. I can make pasta. I can make gravy. It's called gravy if you make it. Fight me. You can meet me in media anytime, any place.
This is a point where Pasquale and I actually disagree, but that's a much longer podcast.
This podcast is about to go south real fucking fast. Get your passports, kids. We're going south. Whatever. But gravy or for purposes of not starting an Italian cultural war in the podcast. When you are home cooking, I can, like, pasta, making gravy or sauce, like, that's kind of all I've ever needed to know how to make.
Yeah.
I can make a few things, like, I don't eat it. I mean, as a vegan, that's also really restricted it, but, like, I can cook breakfast, bake eggs, bacon eggs, whatever, like, but I mean...
enough to keep yourself alive. Yeah, like enough to take care of yourself in a basic way.
I'm not going out of my way to learn how to make baked Alaska, like flaming Alaska, whatever the fuck it is. Baked Alaska.
Baked Alaska, yeah.
Like I don't not necessary.
Yeah.
Not necessary. I don't need to know how to make, you know, whatever. I don't know. My personal opinion is that I can't cook just because I also genuinely just suck at cooking. Not for any other reason, you know, than anything else. It's not even wanting to try. I try. But, like, we have Pinterest and shit like that. You go on, you're like, okay, I'm going to follow this recipe that somebody made.
Yeah.
But like I said, growing up with my sister, and I never needed to know how to cook.
Yeah, and that was actually part of the study was talking about, you know, comparing people who watch, like, online cooking videos to people who don't. And the people who watch cooking videos are, you know, a little bit better. As far as like how confident they are with their skills, at least. But I do want to point out here that at the end of the entire thing, the porch.com study, oh my God, I can't believe I have to say that. The porch.com study actually says that it was a lot of this could be a learned behavior, in that since when Gen X were kids, their parents didn't cook, you know, cooked sometimes, so they were like, fuck it, I'm gonna go out occasionally. Mm-hmm. And then when we were growing up, our parents cooked less, so we were like, fuck it, I'm going out occasionally, mm-hmm. a little bit more occasionally. And it's kind of been growing since, you know, the availability of other options has sort of grown as we've got more mm-hmm. cuisines to choose from, as we've got better inexpensive options to choose from.
And we've both here grown up in the time of instant TV dinners, like throwing in, you know, taking something out, putting it in the microwave, and that's it. And then you don't have to worry about dinner. It has all become like Rachel Ray started that show 30 minute meals or whatever. Like, it has come down to how fast can you make it, and with how much resources we have at our fingertips, learning how to make something from scratch, or, you know, or opening your grandmother's cookbook or something, is no longer something we need, because you can go on the internet and literally find out how to make anything.
Yeah.
I mean,
and I've got all kinds of like old cookbooks upstairs because I think they're really cool.
Yeah.
But like, you know, all the Food Network shows that were on when, you know, when I was kind of like in high school and a little bit later, that you had your 30 minute meals, you've got 5-ingredient fix, make it as easy as possible. You've got like semi homemade with Sandra Lee, which Aunt Sandy is a whole separate thing.
Like, that was no two shots of vodka. Not, I'm just gonna say.
if you've never seen, just search on YouTube for Sandra Lee Hanukkah cake and just sit down.
Or if you want to encompass everything she is in under 7 seconds, just type in 2 shots of vodka on YouTube and you will see. That's the kind of cooking. Yeah, look, look,
look, look. And this is the First Lady of New York, just for the record.
Oh my God, no way.
Yeah.
Sandra Lee is married to Andrew Cuomo.
I believe so, yeah. Yeah. Shit, now I gotta Google that to make sure.
Yeah, I gotta look that up. No.
I'm 99% certain, and this is all getting cut.
Cynthia Nixon, when you get elected governor of New York, because I know you listen to this because you're such an avid fan, can you please make sure that Sandra Lee still has an active part as First Lady?
Yeah.
She can be like...
current First Lady of New York, yeah.
Oh, my God. She can be like, I don't know, like First Lady in some sort of honorary title. I don't know. Please, Cynthia, work on it. God. We can't lose Sandra Lee's 2 shots of vodka. What are we going to do without her?
Oh, my God. So, yeah. So, it ain't just us, guys. I promise.
That is mind-blowing.
Yeah. And then the Bustle article here that kind of summarizes it also describes, you know, But before you mourn the loss of home-cooked meals, bear in mind new dining trends are also changing the cooking game. More than 2/3 of millennials make a habit of watching cooking videos online, like those on Tasty, from which they draw culinary inspiration. Millennials also seem to be more interested in meal delivery programs than any other group. Porch.com reports more than 17% have at least tried out a service like Blue Apron or HelloFresh. So maybe the era of the home-cooked meal isn't over after all. Yeah. How about that?
I just have no words left.
Yeah, no. It's not about killing things. It's about finding better ways to do shit.
Yeah, you know, like the whole millennials killing department stores and shit like that. And I'm like, millennials aren't the ones that invented Amazon.
Yeah.
you know, I don't know what to tell you on that.
Yeah.
But Strawbridges is not Strawbridges did not go under in the 90s because millennials avidly were against it.
Like, millennials who were like 6 years old. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Boskovs is struggling. I mean, the war has just been tireless. Like,
we've lost a lot of good people in this war. We've lost
heavy casualties on the Boskovs front, but we're working on it.
Oh my god,
we're pretty close to killing that industry.
Yeah. And then I want to point out that the final paragraph of Porch.com's study was a sales pitch for, if you need a contractor to redo your kitchen, you can check here. So you know where they're coming from on this.
I'm surprised it wasn't an ad for like Blue Apron or something at the end.
Yeah, I mean, it is a better way to cook. So sponsorship dollars, please. No.
Blue Apron would like to endorse the Delco podcast.
I don't know what the rules are, since we're kind of semi-political. I don't know what the rules are as far as if that counts as a donation.
It ain't called Red Apron.
Nailed it. All right. So, Pasquale, as the Young Democrats of Delaware County's vice president of events, I know that we have an event coming up sometime this week. So why don't you tell us about that?
Okay, so this week, on April 26th from 6 to 8:30, the Delco Young Dems and the Philly Young Dems and the Women's Democratic Club of Delaware County are hosting a 5th Congressional District debate. It is going to be at Galdo's at 1933 West Moyamensing Ave in Philadelphia, 19145. Again, it's from 6 to 8:30. We are organizing this debate to be centered around millennial issues. The Young Dems of both Delco and Philly are, we are putting questions together, and we're kind of going to go back and forth and take apart questions and come up with, I think, about 20 that are going to be real good.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, and it's going to be geared to us. And what makes this debate different than the ones you've heard is that all of these congressional candidates have had time to perfect their stump speeches. And I'm sure for people listening that would consider themselves a young Dem, you've heard the same story over and over. And, you know, we're not going to be asking about your infrastructure plans. We're not going to be, we might ask about Social Security because we're supposed to, but, you know, like, we're not going to be asking about the questions that, you know, are tailored to a more mature audience. This is going to be strictly for young Dems, and I'm actually really excited. I'm hoping to get to ask a few questions myself, but we will see.
Yeah, it's going to be terrific. You know, we're going to make sure that they're actually responding to the needs of the largest voting bloc in America right now, making sure that they have our best interests in mind when they go to craft policy and write legislation. So if you're able to make it out to that on the 26th, please join us. We would be thrilled to see you there. If you can't make it, but you have a question that you want us to ask, you can shoot that over to our emails here. You can send that to mike@delcoyoungdemocast.com or pasquale@delcoyoungdemocast.com, and we can forward that on to the right place. Yeah, and make sure that all of our listeners and all of the Young Dems in Delaware County are represented.
Most importantly, it is also free.
Yes, it is free.
You don't have to pay to go.
Yes, so come hang out with us, please. All right. And now, just to kind of wrap things up a little bit, since self-care is important, I want to talk about something that we've enjoyed over the past week or so that has nothing to do with politics. What you got?
I had something in my mind, but I'm not going to talk about it. It was a good time down in D.C. this weekend. No, I'm just kidding. I spent most of my time in D.C. like I do in Philadelphia, which is constant self-critiques. and when anyone shows slight interest in you, you shoot them down immediately. My self-care for the week, I think, has been, aside from getting forced on a vacation by strep for the second time in 2 weeks.
Jeez, dude.
I'm doing real good. I don't know about you, but I'm just doing really good, and I really wish the same for you. I think my self-care would be, I actually got to hang out with Gina last night.
Oh, cool.
For a while.
Nice.
And we didn't talk about politics for almost a full hour.
Nice.
which was riveting. Of course, it then spiraled into like a 3-hour political conversation after that. But that 1 hour was real nice.
Yeah, you got to restore yourself a little bit.
Exactly.
Which is good.
I was like, oh, we were friends before politics. That's funny.
My cats fucking rule. Like, I've been hanging out with them, and if Amanda was here, she would be saying that she wants to steal them. But like, I know that there are like cat people and dog people, and I'm just saying, like, come together, guys. Mm-hmm. Because animals are good. We generally speaking, don't deserve them. Like, my cat is very canine. It's not the usual aloof, just like hang out upstairs until it's dinner time and then you never see it, except when you have to clean up after it. But my cat, producer Ernie, is...
I love that picture.
Yes. It's one of my favorite things when he's not yelling at me about the show. He's...
Strict deadline.
He acts like a dog, though. He comes when I get home from work. He's at the back door, like, you know, greeting me and hanging out and headbutting my legs and stuff. And I have to say, dude, stop. I've like bug spray on me or whatever. When I'm on the couch, he just like hangs out and like wedges himself between me and the arm of the thing. Like, he'll like sleep on top of my feet in bed at night. And like, he just like, he hangs out. Like, he's cool as shit. And, like, all of the cats we have in the house, we've got three between my wife and I, and all of them are just cool as hell. It's just, like, chill animals that I like hanging out with.
I love animals. I like animals more than people a lot of the time.
I mean, that tracks. Like, but an animal will not flip you off in traffic. An animal will
but
not.
But you know what? I would love to see that. Did you ever see the video? It's one of the vines where it's
the
lab's in the SUV and it's slipping on the ice and it's blowing. That would I would love to see that shit.
Exactly.
I would love to see a dog or a cat blowing down the highway at like 70 miles an hour in an Escalade.
Oh my God.
Like, I would be like, yeah. Like, I mean, you know, life is too short.
Just like on their phone, fucking texting.
I am what you would call chaotic good. That's. I am chaotic good.
The best alignment. Before we get completely down this rabbit hole here, which we can do after the mics go off, I want to thank everybody for joining us on the Delco Young Democast. Thanks to the band Tin Mouth for letting us use their song Generation to Generation as the theme song for our show. And thank you to you guys for listening. Again, please send us over any questions that you have for the 5th Congressional District debate. Please let us know if there's anything else that you guys want to talk about. You know, we're friendly. You can check us out on Facebook at Delco Young Democast. You can check us out on Twitter at DY Democast. And you can find the Delaware County Young Democrats on Facebook as well. Please let us know you're out there. And we will talk to you guys next time. Thank you so much. Take care.